Are we really doing this?
My sister Jacqueline and I stand at the corner of Township Road 594 and Range Road 475 in St. Paul des Métis, and on the edge of two plots of farmland that sit side by side, once owned by two sisters. I take a quick look around at the barren landscape that we just spent 3 hours driving to.
Okay, we saw it. Are we done?
It's an absolutely frigid day in April of 2025, and this scene probably best resembles what our great-grandmother's first look at her new homeland was like. Depressingly gray, violently windy, but full of possibilities. I'm Erica Hanchar, and this is Granddaughter of Immigrants. Episode 18, Cool Folklore. Fifteen years ago, I had sort of been sharing my family's documents and photographs around with Ukrainian organizations, trying to get some information on what the documents even meant. And it was suggested to me to donate our family documents to the Ukrainian Folklore Archive. But back then, I wasn't ready to part ways with these documents, and especially the old photos. I was still trying to piece together a timeline for my family, and still working on understanding what it all meant. But at this point, it had been over a decade now, and I felt like it was finally time, and I was finally ready to hand it all over. We had an appointment to meet with an archivist and the director of the Cool Folklore Center and the Baden-Midwieski Ukrainian Folklore Archives at the University of Alberta. We were there to donate the Hanchar Family Archive. And this road trip with my sister Jacqueline to our great-grandparents' first homestead in Canada and then to Edmonton to the University of Alberta was the start of that. And somewhere between singing and yelling every word of every bridge to every song from Taylor Swift's Eras Tour, like it was our job, my sister Jacqueline asked me, "So, what's the story with our family?" We're barely 1 hour into our 3 hour trip. For the next 2.5 hours, I told her everything I could. The story came out of me like a well-rehearsed movie script. I knew every character's part. We talked about the trauma of the men and the bravery of the women. And I saw my sister for the first time grab onto something, onto elements and characters in our history, and claim them as her own family. Our family, as we knew it, was a bunch of miserable old men who soothed the pangs of their unhealed wounds with alcohol, and eventually let it take them. And for the first time, a light shone on a few new characters, the women in our family. Midway through our drive, she turned to me and said, "You know, we're just like them." And I knew exactly who she was talking about. Anastasia and Maria? Yeah, the sisters. When we pulled up to the ivy-covered building, reminiscent of a Harvard or an Oxford that you might see in a movie, we were both filled with a new sense of pride, the type of pride that only comes from generations of struggle, or at least from just hearing the story of generations of struggle.
Folklore is about artistic expression of identity in everyday life. So this is how we show our identities through different expressions, like verbal expressions, dance, all kind of objects that we want others to see that we belong to the same community. That is the text that we are putting to the outside world through which other people can read who we are, the way of communicating with other people. So folklore is about communicating our identities and making sure that that is communicated in a really beautiful way.
That was my friend Oleksandr Penkeyev, associate professor and cool chair of Ukrainian ethnography at the Department of Modern Languages and Cultural Studies at the University of Alberta and director of the Cool Folklore Center.
Folklore is about that type of life that we experience and right now in this room. So that is something that is happening on a personal level. That is something that is actually how we are shaping and communicating our identities. So folklore is about how you are right now on your folklore journey.
Yes, I am on my folklore journey. I didn't consider it, but yes, I appreciate that and I'm glad to be a part of it.
So, Cool Folklore Center has really interesting story. I would say even like a folk tale.
Oh.
Yes, yeah. Because The center started with a folklore program that began in 1977. And the name associated with the creation of that program is Bogdan Medvedsky.
Bogdan Medvedsky was born in 1936 in Stanislaviv in interwar Poland, present-day Ivano-Frankivsk, Ukraine, just 30 minutes or so from my ancestral village of Chostiv. And at the age of 2 years old, Bogdan fell ill. His parents made the decision to send him to Switzerland for treatment. Separated from his family, he grew up in Switzerland, where he learned to speak French and German and developed a taste for cheese and chocolate, as one does. But during his treatment, World War II broke out, and returning to Ukraine was no longer an option. Bogdan would stay separated from his family for 10 years. His parents and brother fled the Soviets, and by the end of the war found their way to an Austrian displaced persons camp. On the eve of Easter, Bogdan was reunited with his parents and met his younger brother for the first time. But after a decade of separation, his ability to communicate with his Ukrainian family was completely lost. He no longer knew the language. But in the displaced persons camps, Ukrainian culture and language was alive, and Bogdan, for the first time, experienced a Ukrainian Easter celebration and his Ukrainian culture firsthand. It was an experience that followed him and inspired him for the rest of his life.
He was so amazed with the traditions that they, how they celebrated Easter, that since then he wondered what is actually to be Ukrainian. Throughout his life and career, he mastered Ukrainian to perfection. Bogdan Medvedsky was really interested in languages, in traditions, in folklore, how to study folklore, how to preserve folklore, how to make sure that folklore is also available for future generations. That is actually how the center, not only center, but the archives started. That first course that he offered, and then later at those courses, students, they were engaged in different fieldwork. So it was initially the interviews that were collected by those students. Yeah. It's really important. It's really important that there is a recognition of the work that the Cool Folklore Center is doing, that the community recognizes it and sees it as the future. Yes, because right now there is no future without past. So we need to understand it. So if you want to see your future, you need to understand how actually your past was structured.
Part of the identity crisis of my own life has been hung up on being linked so deeply to a culture and historical timelines that no one in my family wanted to talk about. The big insecurity of it all was that I never felt Ukrainian enough. That's no one's fault. It's just a feeling that I decided to never suppress. I didn't understand the culture, so I learned it from books and from scholars and from my family. I didn't speak the language, so I hired a tutor. I didn't understand the politics, so I studied the history and involved myself in the conversation. I'm no Bogdan Medvedsky, but I feel a real kinship to him and his story and his drive for preserving memory.
And memory is really fragile. So many of those people, they are afraid of speaking about what they experienced. And you mentioned that your grandfather was one of them. Yeah. Mm. So, and I personally engaged in so many oral history interviews in Ukraine. And when we interviewed people after the collapse of the Soviet Union about their experience living in the Soviet Union, Holodomor, and etc. So at the beginning, it was almost impossible actually to get those testimonies just because people, they were afraid that that regime is still here and that it is going to hunt them down. And right now, sometimes I think that they were rightly right.
Well, they were, but they also didn't have any resources to deal with how they felt or their trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just grew up with these horrible memories, these horrible feelings, and just being afraid all the time.
Yeah. I remember that when we interviewed some people, and that was first time when they shared their stories, and they never heard the stories even with their members of family. And it was the first time when the members of the family, they were listening to those stories along with us. And they were like crying and expressing that why you have not shared that with us in the past. Yes, so why? So, and right now, like just at this stage of my life, and I understand how memory works and how you are caring not about yourself, you are caring about people. You don't want to shed that burden.
While I can understand the virtuous nature to want to protect loved ones from the weight of a traumatic past, by not sharing the lessons, you ultimately run the risk of never healing the trauma and are often doomed to feed, fuel, or repeat it. And donating the archive for my family is part of healing the traumas of our story. But it would also mean that scholars and students have access to it for references and research purposes. It also means that all the research and all those years of caring for these documents and making sure that they were always safe was no longer my burden to carry. I used to have stress dreams about the house catching on fire and only my family history archive being lost. My entire family agreed that there was no better place for our memories and the history of our family to live than within the Kuhl Folklore Center and its archives. Bringing them here was like bringing them home. It had taken me years to collect it all. I had added new family members to our family tree. I was even able to find the exact plots of land that our pioneering great-grandparents farmed when they first came to Alberta in 1925, the land that we had just stood on. I added ship's manifests and Canadian citizenship papers and my great-grandfather's passports. And as I signed the release form, handing over the metaphorical keys to our family safe and its lifetime of secrets, it wasn't lost on me that for years, I'd been the family's unofficial keeper of memory. Searching for, preserving, digitizing, and guarding every document so that it wouldn't disappear. I held on to them for so long, thinking that I needed to understand them before I could even let them go. But archiving them doesn't mean that they're hidden. Someday, maybe a student, a scholar, or a stranger will scroll through the digital files or shuffle delicately through centuries-old papers and stumble upon our name. Maybe they'll pause, maybe they'll pull it out and breathe life back into it again. The archives hold more than just documents from families like mine. They are also a catalog of culture and of a group of people who came to a place where not only were they able to live free from oppression, but also maintain their religion, their language, and their beliefs. In Canada, they were free to build enterprise, contribute to the economy, and leave behind a legacy worth writing about. We walked out of the university with our heads held a little higher that day. Two modern entrepreneurial women, the great-granddaughters of skilled farmers and real risk-takers, the descendants of men and women who made the hard decisions to change their lives, to fight for autonomy, all in the name of making a better life for their families. We walked out of the university, the granddaughters of immigrants. This episode of Granddaughter of Immigrants was written by me, Erica Hanchar, and made possible with the help of our guest, Oleksandr Penkeyev, at the University of Alberta. If you would like to offer a donation of archival material, artifacts, and or make a monetary donation to the archives at the Kuhl Folklore Center that will help process your materials faster, please contact the archives at ukrfolk@ualberta.ca. Or at the Baden Midwiski Ukrainian Folklore Archives, located at 250 Arts and Convocation Hall, University of Alberta, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Sound engineering and design for this episode by Colin Thompson and me. Music for this episode by Ezekiel Raz, Simo, and Out of Flux. For the full transcript, please see the show notes. Granddaughter of Immigrants is brought to you by Main Character Creative, a digital media agency.